there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you mind? We're playing through. Here's Froggy and Whacker.
Hey, it's Froggy from Elvis Duran, the morning show, along with Whacker. And we're here to recap the amazing U.S. Open that was. There are so many storylines, Whacker, that came out of the U.S. Open. Real quick, if you want to get us anywhere, we're on Twitter, at PlaythroughGolf, at BrianWhacker1, and at Froggy Radio, also on Instagram as well. So where do we start? Obviously, congratulations to Brooks Koepka. But what storyline do you want to get into first, Whacker?
Really? There were storylines? You know, it just seemed like a pretty mundane week to me. You know, the crazy thing is, look, through the first couple of days, it felt, quite honestly, a bit dull. The crowds were actually down a bit this year. I don't know if that was part of it being on the eastern end of Long Island and all the traffic nightmares that occurred, but the event was not sold out. It sort of felt very flat, and then Saturday happened.
Saturday,
it changed everything.
Yes, Saturday really changed things. For example, now you were there, you watched it. Do you feel like they lost the golf course? Zach Johnson really held nothing back. Said they had lost the golf course. It was in awful shape. I saw a couple putts. I saw one, for example, from Justin Rose. He barely breathed on it. It rolled 35, 40 feet past the hole. Did they lose the course on Saturday?
You know, I'm not one to generally say they did, because I like these guys having to deal with those problems. But to your point, whether it was Justin Rose's putt, I saw Ian Poulter hit a really terrific bunker shot that landed well short of the hole on Saturday and just kind of trickled to the hole and kept going.
Right.
And it rolled off the green. It was incredible. So yes, they lost the golf course, and they admitted they lost the golf course, which is amazing, because you go back to the last time they were at Shinnecock in 2004, and that was a disaster. They knew they couldn't have another disaster like that. And that's exactly what happened. You know, last year was a bit of a mess, with a golf course that didn't feel like a U.S. Open, because you had fairways that were 60, 70 yards wide.
Right, at Erin Hills.
Yeah, at Erin Hills. And at Shinnecock, you know, when they sort of first started to set the place up for this, the fairways were pretty wide. And then I think Erin Hills happened, and they started to bring them in because they were nervous.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a problem with the fairways. Yeah. The fairways were nice. I liked the fact that the rough was high. If you hit it in the rough,
yep,
you were really chopping out and then hoping to get up and down for par on a par four, or not getting there in two on a par five. I've got no issue with that. I understand that's part of U.S. Open golf. However,
yep,
I saw on Thursday, it was Jordan's second shot out of the bunker on hole number two. The ball landed short of the pin, rolled off. He chipped it up, got it on the green, it rolled off again. I knew then that it was going to be rough. But Saturday was completely unacceptable the way that the greens were set up. And they had to know this. Some of the pin placements were ridiculous. They were on edges. Yeah. They were on hills. I mean, they had to know going in. The superintendent of that golf course and the superintendent of the USGA had to know that it was questionable as they teed off on Saturday.
Well, the incredible thing to me is that, you know, look, I walked around the golf course Saturday morning and thought, boy, it feels like it's going to get awfully crispy out here in, you know, by this afternoon. And sure enough, it did. And then you looked at the pin placements, to your point, and boy, some of those were in really, really bad positions. I mean, they were using pin positions, frankly, that they've never even used before.
Right.
So, it was incredible that they put some of those pins where they did and somehow claimed on Saturday night that, you know, they got wind that they did not expect. Look, it's Eastern Long Island. Do you think the wind's not going to blow?
Right.
I don't understand what, you know, what the logic was. And sure, some of the forecast may have been off. But again, you've got to account for that happening. So it's just amazing to me that they let the golf course get away. And then on Sunday, what happened was Saturday was such a disaster that, you know, they set the course up with a lot of pins basically in the middle of the green,
right,
which was another disaster. And the course played, now look, the course didn't play easy, but it played
easier.
More than three shots easier than the day before. So to me, that just doesn't, you know, that just doesn't line up. To me, I don't know. I would have rather seen, given the conditions, I would have rather seen the setup on Sunday, on Saturday, and then don't water the green, you know, sort of go with a tougher setup Sunday. But they clearly let it get away from them, and it turned into another embarrassment.
Right, it really was. It was a problem. Now, also on Saturday, the big story Saturday was Phil. Now, you and I have not discussed this whatsoever, so I want to go ahead and get your take on Phil first. We all saw what happened. There's no judgment there. What do you think should have been done?
Well, if anybody's read my column on golfdigest.com, and yourself included, he should have been disqualified.
Absolutely. Period. He should have been disqualified. If that was Tiger Woods who did that, he would have been given a hard time. People would have said he had no respect for the game. People would have said he needs to get over himself. He would have been grilled, and it never would have ended. It would have been a career moment for Tiger that we would have talked about for years. But when it comes to Phil, for some reason, he gets a pass, and he didn't get disqualified. That was a complete intentional going against the rules. He knew exactly what he was doing there. He knew that ball was going to roll off the green, and he was going to at least take two shots to get back up on and have a chance at it again.
Yep.
Now, looking backwards, I know there's the rule. You and I got a text yesterday from Ryan Lauder at TaylorMade. I didn't know that it's possible he could have let that ball roll off the green, called it an unplayable lie, put it back where he started and putt again and only taken a one-shot penalty.
Correct.
Instead, he took a two-shot penalty because the ball was moving. But to me,
and he was asked about that. Yeah, we asked Phil about that, and he said, look, he just felt that was the better option because he felt like, you know, he wasn't sure if it was going to take two more, if he'd be able to get up and down, if he had done that. I'm not buying it. I'm sorry, but the explanation he gave on Saturday in talking in the media was just bogus. It was flimsy, and it was bogus. And I'm sorry. Look, Phil has been an incredible ambassador to this game. No question about it. After he finished his round on Sunday, he signed autographs for more than 30 minutes. He didn't really stop and talk to the media, declined to stop, which was ironic because earlier in the week, there was a little bit of a miscommunication on Friday trying to get Phil to stop and talk before any of this had happened. And it didn't happen. And it was more, hey, you know, look, I love talking to you guys is actually what he said. Wasn't Phil's fault, but, you know, then on Sunday, he just bailed out of there. He ejected.
Right.
He walked across the driving range and in the locker room and, you know, maybe kind of flippantly answered a couple of questions, but later on did text a couple of members of the media saying, you know, probably not my finest moment in reference to Saturday with what he did on the green at 13. But absolutely, the USGA dropped the ball on this. By the letter of the law, yes, they applied the rule by the letter of the law. The problem is Rule 33.7, as I wrote, basically that trumps everything, because if there's something done sort of against, you know, essentially a serious breach against the spirit of the game and so forth. I mean, Phil ran after that putt, that runaway putt, like there was a sale on those mizzen and main button downs. It was ridiculous.
Wacker, I'm telling you, it looked like some shit my kid when he was 8 did at a putt-putt golf course. When you know you're not going to make it, and you just run off and just hit it. And here's the crazy part. It almost went in.
Yeah.
It almost goes in. However, intent was not within the rules.
And look, what he did, if he had, it's sort of a two-part problem, because there's the action of what he did. And, of course, John Daly did this in 1999 at Pinehurst as the ball was rolling back to him. He was walking toward it and just gave it a big old whack with his putter. And he admitted afterward, he said, look, I was pissed off. I didn't agree with their setup. So that was my way of sending a message. You know, if Phil had come off and said, look, either if he had said, look, that was my way of sending a message to the USGA that their course was a joke in terms of the setup, or, hey, guys, I screwed up. I made a mistake. You know, look, it would be different. It wouldn't change the fact of what he did.
Right.
But it certainly, his explanation afterward made it really a lot worse, you know, trying to say that it was using the rules to his advantage. I mean, that's just a loophole. That's, you know, that's some middle school excuse that you give in the principal's office. It just rang incredibly hollow to me. And Phil rightfully got slaughtered, I think, by the media over it. And, you know, a lot of fans, it was very interesting, though, because there's a lot of fans that there's not a lot of middle ground on this one. A lot of fans are really against it and thought he should have been WD'd. Or you had another segment that really thought, come on, this is no big deal. He operated within the rules, which, to your point, Phil gets a pass sometimes for whatever reason. Phil gets the pass. And you brought up Tiger Woods earlier. You know, to Tiger's credit, he always stops and talks to the media after his round. Good, bad, or indifferent, you can count on, or I can count on one hand how many times he's blown the media off.
Tiger would never have done what Phil did on the 13th green, ever.
No, absolutely. Never would have done that. And nobody else in the field did either, by the way. Everyone else played the same ridiculous golf course, the same ridiculous pin positions. The other 60-plus guys that were playing, none of them did that. So I'm sorry, he doesn't get a pass this time.
I agree 100%. So let's talk about Brooks Koepka. What an amazing! I mean,
boy,
when you get down, it wasn't even the ball striking; it was the amazing up and downs he had on Sunday. I mean, ridiculous. Got up and down for bogey. I don't remember what hole it was, but he was over the green in the thick stuff, hit it in the bunker. Save bogey from 8 feet, goes to the next hole, drives it in the thick stuff, gets up and down from 70 yards, rolls another putt in. I mean, his putting and short game was ridiculous on Sunday. That's why he's a back-to-back U.S. Open champion.
It's amazing. And this one, to me, this elevated him because, look, Aaron Hills was a place that he could just grab by the throat and just beat into submission. He just pounded driver and three wood. And, you know, really it was kind of a nothing golf course in to him in that respect. But, look, Shinnecock Hills, this is a classic golf course where it takes some nuance to and some, you know, you mentioned the short game, the putting, some of the creativity and the ability to hit some in-between shots. We saw him getting up and down with, you know, 60-yard pitch shots, things like that. So, to me, this elevated him. This was he's been an underrated guy. You look at his career in the U.S. Open, has not finished outside the top 20. Of course, he's won the last two. He's been good overall in majors. This is a guy who is elevated to another level in my eyes after this victory, and he's always felt sort of underrated. And look, you have to look at where he came from and how he got to this point. You know, going on going over to the European Tour and playing in Europe to basically work his way to the PGA Tour, because he tried to qualify for the tour, playing in the States, didn't, had an opportunity to go to Europe, took that, and that really elevated his game, because he had, playing over there, you've got to hit all sorts of shots, you play in all kinds of conditions, much different than the sort of run-of-the-mill PGA Tour setup we see on a week-to-week basis. And I think, he has been overlooked. I'm as guilty of it as anybody. And, now he's got a two-time U.S. Open champion. He's a big-time player, and he's going to be around for a long time at just 28 years old.
Yeah, I mean, it really was a good tournament. It was good to see Koepka win. It was really the up and downs. The short game, there's so much goes into talking about his power. And the same with DJ. These guys overpower the golf course. And let's be honest, they did hit it a long ways. It's a lot of times I saw DJ hitting driving irons and getting down the hill and having short approach shots in. But ultimately, the undoing of DJ was he missed some short putts, which have become uncharacteristic of him as of late. And his wedge game was not as good as we've seen it in the past as well. And everybody's going to have off days and have off times. But we talk about, so many people talk about the bowed left wrist at the top and the way these guys overpower a golf course. But at the end of the day, the short game that the two of them have shown is why they've gone from being regular tour players and just hitting it a long ways to both of them winning big tournaments, DJ becoming number one in the world, Brooks becoming back-to-back U.S. Open champions, all is because of the short game they're displaying.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you go back to when Dustin Johnson won at Oakmont. It was, it was the short game. It was he putted pretty well that week, but it was the wedge game. And to your point, this week he didn't putt very well, especially on the weekend, and that cost him. And Brooks, played terrifically.
Brooks made everything on Sunday. I mean, he made everything on Sunday. I thought the par putt on 18 was going to fall. I mean, everything else had fallen.
Yeah, I mean, so, as much as golf has turned into this sort of bomb and gouge game, which it is, every week on the PGA Tour, almost every week, that works. But there still are times. Now, you still got to be able to hit it a long way these days. I mean, you really just don't see short hitters. People will talk about Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth is not short. I mean, he averages well above 290, and he can get it out there a little bit, but you've got to be able to hit it far. But then, in terms of scoring, golf hasn't changed that way. I mean, comes down to short game, being able to get up and down, make putts. That's the separator, and that's what we saw this week.
Yeah, I know the ratings were not what they had wanted them to be. I think part of that plays into the fact that Tiger did not play the weekend. Tiger was really just undone.
Nor did many other big names.
Right. I mean, Rory or Jason Day. Tiger's undoing was the first two holes, really. I mean, he was 7 over on the first two holes and 3 over on the other 16 holes. I mean, he really struggled on those first two. Started out triple bogey on the first day and then went double bogey on the second day. He really could not get it going on either one of those two holes.
Which is amazing, because the first hole was one of the easiest holes in the golf course all week. And here's Tiger, and he goes triple-double on Thursday, Friday, which is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, half of the shots he gave up were given up on that hole.
Yeah, and I mean, this is kind of my point when talking about Tiger, is that I feel like, look, he's not – sure, he can have moments or even a week, like we go back to Tampa – certainly Bay Hill, he played well there and some other places, but, it gets exponentially more difficult for him in a major championship because of the course, the field, the conditions. His game has got to be really dialed in
right, to
even have a chance of being in the top, 20 or 25, which is true of most guys. And that's sort of my point, is that when he's off, he's just another guy. I mean, this isn't the old Tiger who could win with a C game or even B game. I mean, he needs the A-plus game to even have a chance to win, and which is true of most players.
Right. Do you think we've regressed a little bit? Would you say we've gone backwards? Like, I feel like we came out of the gate a little slow, and then we exploded at Valspar. Things were still high, even at Bay Hill, and he played well at the Players on the weekend. Would you say that maybe we've regressed a little bit, or do you think it's the nature of just the golf courses that he's playing, that these are harder golf courses?
No, I actually don't, because two things. I think, one, you know, a year ago, if you had said to us a year ago, Tiger's going to do X, Y, and Z, I don't think any of us would have thought that would have been possible. And remember, this was just his, I believe, his 10th start since coming back. So,
right.
You know, he was basically off for 2 years. He didn't play golf for 2 years. So,
yeah, but the putting is not good lately. You got to admit, the putting is off from what it was.
But that's going to happen. That's, you know, he's not the same guy. We can't expect just because his name is Tiger Woods that he's going to start playing like that guy anymore. He's not. I mean, look, he's going to have weeks where he goes backwards or doesn't play well, because that's the nature of golf. And look, Justin Thomas won 5 times a year ago.
Right.
He's not having quite the season he had a year ago. Now, there's still plenty of time to go, but, you know, I don't think anybody would say, you know, look, Justin did get to number one in the world briefly, but he, you know, he's not having quite the year he had a year ago. Didn't play well at Augusta, et cetera. You know, these other guys, when they miss a cut or they have an off week and don't contend, it's sort of like, well, that's just kind of how it goes. The same is true with Tiger at this point. He's 42. He's, you know, his game isn't what it was. It's just not. I mean, sure, he can dial up weeks, he can dial up some great shots and unbelievable ball striking on an occasional week, but we're just not going to see it from him week in and week out,
right.
And we're not going to see him build toward, just because he goes on a run of maybe 3 or 4 really good weeks where you can see the game kind of looking really good, maybe being missing just a little part, we're not just going to, that just doesn't automatically add up to a win. It just doesn't work that way.
Right. He's actually a victim of his own past success at this point. We're expecting, we're comparing him to him, which is not fair.
Right, exactly.
Right. So let me ask you this. So he's off this week, which I know you're headed to the Travelers now. He's off this week. He will play next week at the Quicken Loans Arena. Will we see a better game? Is that an easier golf course for him? Is it a course he's more familiar with? Is there a better chance for him to contend there?
Well, two things. First of all, it's actually just called the National. Quicken Loans is no longer the sponsor. Quicken Loans Arena is where LeBron James is spending his last days, I would imagine.
Yes, yes, yes.
It goes to TPC Avenue, which is, they've bounced around that metropolitan D.C. area now for a few years.
Right.
Last year of the event. It's a very weak field. He should do well there. The golf course is a golf course you would think he would do well with, but again, it's not one he's all familiar with in terms of, yeah, hasn't played there a ton. So you would think he would do okay, but, I don't think he's going to miss a cut there. But is he going to win? I don't know. I think somewhere in the top 25 is probably reasonable to expect and maybe even likely. I mean, maybe he even contends there just because the field and the golf course maybe sets up for him well. We'll find out. But I certainly expect him to play better there than he did at Shinnecock.
Right. Let's hope so. So real quick before we go, I know we've got something really cool to give away. We want to do it very soon.
This is awesome. This is a good deal. Yeah, this is going to be good.
So as you saw, actually the last three champions of the U.S. Open, Dustin Johnson and now back-to-back by Koepka, have all played TaylorMade drivers all 3 years in a row. So we've got 3 years in a row of a TaylorMade driver. We've got a TaylorMade driver to give away, and we also have the bag that you saw Dustin carrying, the bag that you saw Jason Day carrying. Those bags, TaylorMade Special Edition U.S. Open bags, have the baseball stitching on them, have the hot dog lining on the inside of them. We have one of those to give away as well. We will do that in the coming weeks. Going to get with TaylorMade and put both of those in your hands. Some pretty cool giveaways we have coming up.
Yeah, that is really cool, man. So whoever's listening, you're going to have a chance to get something really cool here. So stay tuned for details. We'll have more of that likely on the next podcast. And, yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah, it'll be a good time. Actually, I'm actually heading to Alaska soon. No golf in Alaska unless you play ice golf. I'm not exactly sure that there's any of that going on there.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah, but look, you'll get plenty of rollout.
Yeah, exactly. There, plenty of that. And you're headed to the Travelers this week. Pretty strong field there as well, right?
Yeah, they've done a terrific job. This, of course, is a fantastic event. Week after the U.S. Open, they've got the last four major winners in the field. I believe seven of the top 10 in the world. Jordan Spieth, of course, winning it last year, dramatic fashion, hole out in the playoff in the bunker. So that was really cool. You've got Rory, you've got Justin Thomas, Jason Day, Brooks Koepka. It's loaded, so it should be really, really good. It's a fantastic event. They do a wonderful job. It'll be the complete opposite of the U.S. Open.
You'll right.
see plenty of birdies. Got a really cool finishing stretch from 15 through 18, where you can see a lot of swings in terms of scores. 15 a reachable par four, 16 a par three over water, 17 a difficult par four around water, and then a cool 18th hole that plays up to an amphitheater finish. So it's a great event. They've done a wonderful job with it. It's near and dear to me, having grown up not too far from where the tournament's played. So it should be a great week, and it'll be fun. These guys, you will not hear these guys complaining about the course this week. They will very much be looking forward to being able to make birdie and get back to it.
Right, good deal. Well, thanks for listening. Appreciate everything. So another U.S. Open in the books. Brooks Koepka, back-to-back U.S. Open champion. Two majors in the books this year. We've got a Patrick Reed Masters champion and Brooks Koepka, your U.S. Open champion. So now we move on. We'll have the Open Championship, as they call it. I still call it the British Open, but the Open Championship. And then we have the PGA Championship still to go. So we're halfway through the majors in 2018. Wacker, we'll do it again soon. Appreciate it. Enjoy the Travelers, and we'll talk to you soon.
I think you've had enough.
Playing through.
No? Now you've had enough.
With Froggy and Wacker.
Bitch.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.